You're listening to the Always Forward Leadership Podcast,
featuring the leadership of Ron Kitchens.
The topics discussed today are designed
to keep you moving always forward.
Hey everyone, thanks so much for listening to the Always Forward Leadership Podcast. I'm Amanda Harrison here with Ron Kitchens, and today's podcast is all about creativity and leadership. This is something that Ron has shared on extensively in his blog and podcast. So today we wanted to give you some insight and perspective from another creative leader.
That's right. Creativity is an important part of what we do every day as leaders. But instead of hearing from me today, our listeners are really going to enjoy Amanda interviewing Scott Belsky. I think a lot of people know Scott is the best-selling author of Making Ideas Happen, founder of Behance. He's now a vice president with Adobe. Scott has an unparalleled insight into creativity and productivity. And as leaders, it's our responsibility to constantly innovate, to constantly find new ways to share our message, to share our products, to share our why. And I think we get great insight from Scott on this. And, you know, if people are inspired by hearing what Scott has to say, you know, Scott's also joining us for Catalyst University 2016. And if our listeners are inspired by what they hear from Scott, and I know they will be, you know, we'd love to have them join us at Catalyst University. And you can find more about that at catalystuniversity.me, where you hear Scott and a lot of other incredible thought leaders. But now it's time for Amanda and Scott to really share with us what the future of leadership and creativity are going to look like.
Okay, Scott, let's start with kind of an introduction to this subject. What does productivity mean to you?
Productivity is making an impact in what matters most to you. You know, we all have interests. We all have things that matter to us. But making an impact requires us to constantly optimize how we spend our time and our energy, how we prioritize. And that, to me, is where productivity comes in.
So I know that creativity is something that matters to you. So how do you see productivity and creativity intersecting?
Well, creativity is having a genuine interest combined with initiative. So when there's something that you really, really love and are obsessed with to the point where you'll hold your eyes open at night to keep reading about it and you'll stay awake to keep thinking about it, combined with initiative, the desire to actually do something with it, you know, to me, that's creativity. That's having an interest in actually having an initiative to pursue it, to do something new and explorative with it. Productivity is your ability to make an impact. So you can have a genuine interest and initiative, but if you have no productivity, you'll never make an impact in that. So that's why I think creativity plus productivity is the lethal combination that changes the world as we know it.
Absolutely. So I know you're a really busy guy. You're doing a lot of different things, juggling a lot of different balls at all times, a lot of plates in the air. So how do you personally structure your day or your week, if that makes more sense for you, to maximize productivity in your life?
Well, I mean, I'm constantly trying to prioritize and trying to force myself to say no when I'm by default a very accommodating person and always want to say yes. But I'm just realizing that I'm robbing the priorities of my life, the time that they require, by just always trying to say yes to everything. So I think a big part of it is a constant reprioritization and just bringing more discipline into your life.
Yeah, that's great feedback. And it's obviously no easy feat. I've heard so many times that idea of learning to say no, and it never gets easy. But have you developed any specific tips or maybe habits that have helped you become more productive? So you've talked about prioritization. Is there anything specific, practical takeaways that our listeners could learn from?
Well, I'm a meticulous list keeper, specifically actionable lists, to-do lists. I try to write down everything that I feel I need to do, and I start everything with a verb, so it's actionable. And I always assign a due date. You know, I feel like if you don't assign a deadline for anything you know you need to do to move the ball forward, it will never get done. And then I think you also need to ritualize the idea of tending to your to-do list, you know, constantly cleaning it. It's okay to find things that you said you were going to do and decide not to do them. It's a very healthy thing, and it should happen ritualistically throughout your week. So I have a period of time, usually every evening, where I just kind of go through and clean my lists, reprioritize, change due dates, And I also, whenever I'm having conversations with people or are in meetings, I really require that myself and others write things down. I feel like if it's not captured, it will never happen. And I think it's important to have a culture of capturing action, you know, where everyone is expected to capture action steps and also has permission to call each other out on letting something slip.
Yeah, that's really good takeaway advice. I love the idea of being a meticulous list keeper, starting everything with a verb and assigning it a due date. That's super practical advice that we can put into action right away. So thank you for going there. At the beginning of our conversation, you talked about creativity is having a genuine interest that you're, you know, willing to hold your eyes open at night, to keep learning about, to keep investing in. And we hear all the time from great leaders that they only sleep 4 to 5 hours a night to achieve this lifestyle of success and maximum productivity. But at the same time, we hear all kinds of studies about being the most effective, you need to have, you know, that solid 7 to 8 hours of sleep. So I'm just curious, what seems to work for you on balancing that coin? Or is it kind of a mixture of both?
I think in reality, it's a mixture of both. I mean, I certainly function best when I have at least 7 hours of sleep. And again, it's not about how much you can get done, but also the quality that you can get things done at. And so when I am rested, I'm able to be more potent in my actions, and I feel like I'm able to make better decisions. So I think it's a fallacy that just, gosh, you know, if you can survive on the fewest number of sleep hours, you're going to get the most done, because it's not just about how you use your time, but it's how you use your energy. You know, an hour with a lot of energy is worth more than an hour with very little energy.
Yeah, that's great feedback. That quality over quantity is a huge thing to keep in mind. So I'm curious, in today's world of iPhones and social media and push notifications on every single app that we have, I know it can be easy to use technology as a time waster rather than a time saver, even though I'm not sure that's what it was intended to be. So how do you stay efficient with your time, specifically when it comes to technology?
Well, what I try to do is I try to ask myself, what am I doing something for? Why am I repeatedly checking some analytics program to see what's happening? Or why am I going back to Instagram or to Twitter or some other place? Sometimes the answer is to learn something or to find the answer for something, to make a decision. Sometimes it's because I'm just insecure and I want to know that people are still looking at my article or visiting my website or whatever it might be. And so I call it insecurity work. It's stuff that we do that doesn't move the ball forward in any way. It's not answering a question that we have. It's stuff that we do just to assure ourselves that everything is okay. And it's normal. Everyone does it. The problem in this day and age with everything in the palm of your hand in a constantly connected world is that you can constantly be tuning in to things to make yourself feel self-assured and not be proactive in doing things that move the ball forward. And so I always encourage people to kind of audit themselves and ask, you know, how much work are they doing that's really just insecurity work? And then try to limit it. Some people, what they do is they compartmentalize it all to 1 hour at the end of the day. So anything that they do that they just look at to assure themselves that everything is moving in the right direction, they compartmentalize into one little period where they're allowed to do it. And they don't allow themselves to do it any other time during the day.
Yeah, that's really good advice. And that term insecurity work, I think, is something that probably hits a nerve with everybody listening. Like you said, it's something everyone can relate to and we all do it. But being aware of it and auditing that time is very good advice. So on the flip side of that technology coin, there's obviously lots of apps out there that are intended to boost productivity. I know you talked about maintaining lists. I don't know if you do that in paper format or if you use some kind of an app, but we're curious if you have any apps or any sort of technology programs that you would recommend to enhance productivity.
Well, everyone, you know, has a different product that works for them. And I tend to say that it's sort of like a home-cooked meal always tastes a little better. You know, when you make your own system, you find your own tools and you make them yours, then you're more likely to stay loyal to them over time, which ultimately just determines how successful they are. So for myself, I like to use a to-do list program called Wunderlist. I also use Evernote for notes and a number of other apps, but I also like to switch them up every now and then. I feel like when you bring in a new tool, you're forced to clean your system and to optimize the way you do things. And I think that's also a healthy process. So Some people thrive off of paper, and some people use certain notebooks with certain pens and certain pencils. And, you know, these sorts of neurotic things that we do are actually what keep us loyal to our system. And that's the most important thing, is to find something you really feel comfortable with over time.
Excellent. So I want to switch gears a little bit and go back to talking about organizations and how productivity plays there. So we talk a lot, or we hear a lot, that culture is king and employees want to go where there's a great culture and where they truly fit with the culture. So how do you feel that building a strong culture in an organization, a team, a not-for-profit helps increase productivity? Is there a connection there?
Well, there's certainly a connection when a culture on a team is one that eliminates work that doesn't move the ball forward. So, you know, there's a lot of company cultures that have a lot of politics and posturing, a lot of cultures that require meetings for no other reason than to make the leader feel like he or she is aware of what's going on at the expense of everyone's productivity. So I think that, you know, a healthy culture on a team allows people to focus their energy on work that actually matters and doesn't have as many systems, processes that are just overhead. It's sort of the result of misalignment. You know, when there's not alignment in your team, when people have a different take on the mission or different priorities or different work habits, then you instill process. You know, if people aren't working the hours they're supposed to work to get the work done, then you require people to be in at a certain time. And then you have check-in processes and time cards. And, you know, when people are not aligned on what's important, you have to have meetings to prioritize and to get people to be on the same page. So a great culture keeps people aligned naturally. And a bad culture is one where people are constantly misaligned and there's a tremendous amount of overhead to get you back to square one.
So in your experience and everything that you're involved in, have you seen any great examples of companies that are doing this well, companies that are getting their people to be super productive? And what are you seeing them doing in addition to what you just mentioned?
Well, I think that's a full end-to-end answer. I think some of the most impressive companies that I've come across are teams of companies. You know, they hire the right people. You know, they're hiring people who want to work there for the right reasons. They're hiring people with initiative over experience. They're not just hiring superstars who can't get along, but they're hiring people who have a history of taking initiative and what's interesting to them. You know, they're empowering people to make a lot of decisions on their own so that there isn't too much unnecessary process when it comes to taking action. They are, you know, minimizing the number of meetings that people have to be at just for the sake of it. And they're really trying to make meetings more of a action-oriented, short check-in where people are typically standing, so they're not sitting and getting comfortable. You know, there's a whole suite of things, I think, that great teams at companies, and I distinguish between teams and companies because there are many different cultures within a company. Every Sure. team operates differently. And I think when you're trying to really boost the productivity of your organization, it's on a team-by-team basis.
You mentioned that having great talent, great employees, great people is a huge part of culture, a huge part of productivity, and what most companies are seeking today. So my question is, you mentioned this, when you're building teams, how do you specifically select the right people? Do you have a process for looking at people? You mentioned taking initiative over experience. So how do you select people with amazing, you know, creativity or whatever it's going to take to maximize that productivity to help you move the ball forward?
Well, I mean, I would say two things. And of course, you know, we could talk all day about the answer to that question. You know, one of the most important things a leader can do is to hire the right team. So much goes into it. But you know, two things that I would actionably, you know, suggest people think about. One is, you know, when you're looking at someone's resume, look down in the interest section, you know, the section that has things like bonsai cultivation or badminton or ping pong or whatever the interests are, and ask the person what initiative they've taken in those interests. And some people might say, oh, you know, they're just interests. Not, I don't spend much time on them. And some people might say, oh, well, you know, when I was in college, I started a club on it. And every Sunday now I go and I, you know, part of a league and I'm actually the leader of the league. And then I started at this and I started at that. And what you're doing is you're trying to find evidence that the person takes initiative and what's interesting to them. So you know that if you hire them and they're interested in what you're doing, what you're trying to achieve, that they'll continue this history of taking initiative and what's interesting to them. The second thing that I like to do which is somewhat unorthodox, is I like to actually take candidates and throw them into my team for a meeting, you know, just include them in a brainstorm session or in a product review or some sort of occasion where we're gathering just to see how they interact, to be also very transparent, you know, give them a real sense of what they're getting into. I think it's sometimes more interesting than an interview. It's less formal. It's a little bit more, hey, you know, like jump in. And it feels more like dating. You know, you're kind of going out and just having an experience together and seeing how it goes and whether you want to do it again, as a little bit more of an organic, natural, casual way to bring, you know, a candidate who you already think is a pretty good fit and really figure out whether they are good or not.
Yeah, those are both great ideas and concepts for our listeners to consider implementing into their own hiring practices when they're looking for that top talent. So thank you for sharing that. One thing I want to get your insight on is working remotely. So that's gaining popularity in not just tech companies or web-based companies, but it's really gaining more popularity in every industry. So I want to know, in your mind, do you think that working remotely hurts productivity, helps productivity? Kind of what's your take on that?
Well, questions like that, you know, it really depends on the culture of the team, which we talked a little bit about, the level of trust people have. You know, I like the hybrid model where you have people together physically for a period of time so they get to know each other and trust each other and know each other's idiosyncrasies and tendencies and that sort of stuff before you have people then go remote. Successful work is all about communication. And so historically, the problem with remote working has been it's been very hard to communicate. And of course, now new technology is enabling you to stay closely connected with people, to have transparency in what people are doing. So technologies like Slack are enabling that to happen remotely. And so I think that's important to have a platform to support it, but also to spend that time initially to just build the relationships and the trust between the people.
So that's your take on working remotely for productivity. Does that same response hold true for the creative process?
I think so. I think the creative process is actually a very personal one. You know, when someone's trying to come up with something new or solve a problem, it's oftentimes individuals thinking in isolation and bringing their ideas to the table. When it comes to bringing it to the table and having a brainstorm, I think that can happen productively remotely, again, as long as there's a relationship between the people.
Excellent. So, and as a leader of creative teams and creative companies, how do you know when it's time to squash an idea?
I think when people start to feel lethargic around it, when the energy dissipates, I mean, listen, it's so hard to make an idea happen. You know, you're overcoming such great odds. And if you, in the early stage, start to lose the gusto, you know, you're not going to survive the journey. And so I think there's a bit of a natural selection process that happens around ideas. And you have to let them die. And you have to also be able to kill ideas that are, for whatever reason, you know, losing their legs.
Scott, in closing, first of all, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today. We are super excited to have you join us at Catalyst University in January. But I have one last question for you. So before we go, what's your best advice for leaders out there who are leading or working on creative teams? If you could give kind of one nugget of wisdom to close out our conversation today, what would that be?
Well, I think that some of the greatest creative leaders out there, I'm not the first person to say this, I think it's been said by others before, but, you know, is to be really positive and optimistic about the future, you know, really have an unlimited open mind as to what can be accomplished and how great things can be, but also be pessimistic about tasks. Be skeptical, not cynical, but skeptical about how much you can actually get done tomorrow. And I think it's a very good combo. Oftentimes you get leaders who are pessimistic about both the future and the present, or optimistic about the future and the present. And that's bad, you know, because if you really think you can get through more than you can get through, you won't make the difficult decisions and prioritizing and saying no. I think you need to be somewhat pessimistic about what you can actually get done, but very optimistic about the potential that the future holds. I think that's like the lethal combo for leading a creative team.
Excellent advice. Thank you so much again for being with us. And Scott, we'll see you on January 28th at Catalyst University.
Awesome. I look forward to seeing everyone.
Thanks for joining us for the Always Forward Leadership Podcast. We hope today's insights will help you develop into the leader you dream to be.
To subscribe to Ron's blog or to submit a question for Ron to discuss in a future podcast, visit ronkitchens.com or tweet him at ronkitchens.
Thanks for listening in today. If you're like me, took away some great information, ideas, and really felt challenged by what Scott and Amanda shared with us on leadership. And I encourage you, if you get the opportunity to come hear Scott, whether it's live at Catalyst University in January or it's one of Scott's other speaking opportunities, please step forward in your leadership. Hear this inspiring leader share with us about what innovation and leadership are going to look like in the future.